Welcome everybody to the FMS meeting. I want to just take a quick note to thank somebody who's not here, and that's Rebecca Fleming, who was co-chairing this and put in significant work, made significant progress, and now has moved on to significantly more important tasks. But I did want to acknowledge her assistance, and at the same time thank Chad for now stepping in as co-chair of this committee. It's an important committee. It's just as important as others, but we got some work to do, and I appreciate Chad's assistance. We also have two new members joining us. We're going to take roll in just a minute, but I see Judge Merrifield on there, and I thought I saw Judge Getty as well. I'm sure I did. So thank you.
You
There
did.
you are. Yep. Thanks to both of you for jumping on board with us. I'm sure you'll enjoy the committee. It's a great group of people, both judges and CEOs, and also the staff, most importantly, at the top of the hierarchy helping us out. So with that and the meeting started, I guess, Oksana, you'll be taking roll for us.
Yes, good afternoon. Judge Conklin?
I'm present.
Mr. Simkey?
I'm here. Thank you.
Judge Getty? Did
You say Kelly or Getty?
Getty.
Here.
Did you get that, Oksana? Uh-oh. Oksana, are you still with
She's
us?
gotten, she's been muted. I muted herself.
Let me take over. Judge Kelly?
Here.
Judge
Here.
Merrifield?
Here.
Judge Siebert? Mr. Kim? Ms. Levere?
Here.
Mr. Riley?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi and Mr. Yamasaki. David, I know you're here. I saw you. David?
Yes, I'm here. I'm sorry. I was having some technical issues.
Welcome to my life. So let me just swing back real quick. Judge Siebert, did you join us? Mr. Kim and Mr. Taniguchi? Okay, and I don't think Oksana, are you back yet, Oksana?
He is on screen.
Yeah. So
Judge Conklin, it looks like Mr. Taniguchi may have just joined.
there he is. Neil, you're with us now? You're muted.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry I'm late.
Not a problem. Thanks for joining us. Okay. So I'll show we definitely have a quorum. I'm sure that Oksana is going to swing back and join us. And maybe Fran can confirm this as well. But the last I checked with Brandy, we had no public comment received for
Judge
today's
Conklin,
meeting,
that is
correct?
correct. No public comment.
Okay, great. So I'm going to now request a motion to approve the minutes of the July 6th FMS virtual meeting that are at page 3 of your materials. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Riley moves.
Thank you. And a second?
Second, Yamasaki.
Moved and seconded that the meeting minutes of the July 6th be approved. Any opposition to that motion? Hearing no opposition as the chair, one of the as a I'll deem the minutes unanimously approved. I would also obviously note that we have Zlatko, Fran, Brandy soon to join us, and Oksana, I think she's coming back in as staff members here to assist us in the meeting, as well as those who are going to present. So I believe that Oksana, are you back with us?
No, it's Judge Kelly. I'm just abstaining from that vote on the minutes. I wasn't present at the meeting. Thank you.
And
Okay, great.
myself as well. Judge Getty also abstains.
Yep,
Judge
so we'll
Merrifield.
show, great. We'll show Judge Murrayfield, Judge Getty, all the members that are new to the committee or that were not present, and I think it was just Judge Kelly, are abstaining from that vote. Our minutes are still approved.
Judge
So we're
Conklin,
now,
looks, oh, I'm
go
sorry,
ahead.
Judge. It looks like Mr. Kim has joined us now as well.
Oh, there
Hi,
he
my
is.
apologies for being late, everybody.
That's okay. Do you have any opposition to the motion to approve the minutes, James?
I think I'd like to abstain. I wasn't present at the meeting the last time as well, so I'll just
Okay.
abstain voting from
Great.
approving the
Okay.
minutes.
We'll reflect that when Oksana finally joins us. I think Fran is keeping track of that as well. So, Fran, thank you so much. So I believe that gets us right to our first action item, which is the Community Assistance and Recovery Empowerment, the CARE Act. This is discussion allocation methodology. For those, very briefly, I'm not discussing the CARE Act, but I'm relatively confident even our new members understand, but one of the critical roles FMS plays here is developing, approving, and otherwise suggesting funding methodologies for the amount of money that flows to the trial courts through TICBAC, up through the JBBC, and then ultimately the council. So one of our most important roles on this committee is to examine ways that that money can be sent out equitably and addressing other interests to the trial courts. So they're routinely referred to as funding methodologies. And that's what we're going to deal with here is a new methodology for the 22-23 CARE Act allegations. We've got Don Will with us. And Don, we really appreciate your help. You're always so prepared and productive for us. And Don's going to give us a brief overview of this item and options that we have before us. I hope I haven't left anything out. So Don, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. My name's Don Will from the Judicial Council Center for Families, Children, and the Courts. Also here is Ann Hadrius, who is the lead attorney supervisor in our CARE Judicial Council side of the CARE Act implementation. As I'm sure everyone is aware, the CARE Act is establishing a major new court-based statewide program of mental health services engagement and oversight. The first year of the program, this current fiscal year, has a cohort of counties and courts, their corresponding courts, to begin planning their implementation. And those are in the report. They're Glen, Orange, Riverside, San Diego, San Francisco, Stanislaus, and Tuolumne. But ultimately, all the counties in the state will be phasing in. The costing for the court side of the CARE Act implementation includes a really two lines of funding for the courts. One was based on an estimate of what additional hearings and other courtroom operations would cost. The other side was the administrative function. The first cohort is not directed to begin CARE Act implementation until October 2023. So in this first year, the funding for the that is available to the courts, and the first cohort is the funding that's related to court administration. This funding was estimated for all courts on the basis of assuming that statewide, not court by court necessarily, but statewide, the courts would probably need 2 FTE to implement the program. One in self-help, because the program is designed to work a lot with the self-help centers, and the other for administration and coordination work. So the administrative funding for the first cohort is based on 7 courts, 14 and a half positions, and what was included in this current year's budget act is $2.8 million. So we're asking you today to consider an allocation methodology just for year one and just for allocation to these 7 courts of the $2.8 million. It might be easiest to take the recommendations in reverse order, because we do think as all the courts are coming online to implement the CARE Act, as this various lines of funding will be coming online in 23-24, 24-25, etc., we believed that the TICBAC would want to spend some time considering all of that, carefully looking at the data, looking at the possible any changes to the legislation, and establish work this year on the funding methodologies for 23-24 and ongoing. So our third recommendation is to continue the work on the larger and more comprehensive piece. At the same time, we're trying to get the funding to the courts in cohort one, so that they'll have it to begin their planning. We knew that the committee would want to make that available as soon as possible. So we're bringing to you kind of the simplest recommendation that we can come up with as staff for allocating the funding for just this 2.8 million for this current fiscal year to get into the court, cohort one court hands. So we looked and presented to you several scenarios. If we allocated it pro rata by population, by total filings, by the workload formula, and then our fourth scenario would be establishing a floor, because by the pro rata allocation, the small courts, as always, don't get very much. We estimated that 0.25 FTE would be a good starting place. So the final allocation, and the one that staff put as a recommendation, is to have a base of that 0.25, which is 49,000, and then to use the 22-23 workload formula to allocate the remainder of the funding. So that is actually recommendation number one. And then the final recommendation number two, is to allow the committee to do a reconciliation and a reallocation of the funding in the spring if this method, if there's some funding that some courts don't need to do, we can reallocate it to courts that can use it. That's my presentation on this. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Don, thanks so much. Anybody, and I know, actually I don't know, so it's rather difficult for me to speculate with our new members coming aboard, and also I'm kind of circulating back onto FMS. Don was very helpful. That there were some rather technical discussions about, you know, those courts, the floor courts. So those, overgeneralizing, it's those extremely small courts who need a floor to account for the costs that we all are responsible for. And in those small courts, sometimes their allocations don't even get them up to the floor level. I'm probably butchering this by overgeneralizing it, but I think that's what Don was referring to. So also the workload formula, I assume you're familiar with that, folks. If not, feel free to reach out. Probably be better to reach out to Chad or to maybe even David if you have any questions about what, when we say workload, what do we mean? But I doubt that's a problem, but I've been on this committee for more years than I can remember, and I still struggle sometimes as these terms get thrown out. So I just encourage you, if you have any confusion at all, don't be shy. But with that, any questions of Don about the three recommendations, or of anybody about the three recommendations or comments? David, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Judge Conklin. I don't necessarily have questions, but I do have a couple of comments. Orange, full disclosure, is one of the courts that was included as a cohort. And we've been doing a lot of work trying to put arms around what the impact is going to be on our county and our court, and making sure that we can address the requirements that are contained in the CARES Act. I think that item number three, or recommendation number three, is to develop work on how to go forward. there are so many questions about volume. There are so many questions about scope as well as capacity that I think those courts that have been included in the first cohort are going to try to tease out as we start putting everything in place. So I think that that obviously is a very reasonable approach and one that I would support. In terms of the first recommendation also, there's no perfect solution. Again, we're trying to figure out how best to tackle some of the issues that we're going to be facing. What's the volume? I think that's a big question. And there may be a variance from court to court, but this is a pretty good starting point. The other issue, though, relates to recommendation number two. The reason why I'm pausing there is that the money that we're going to start seeing is coming in January, I think at the earliest, because that's when the Judicial Council is going to have to make a decision. And I am concerned that if we don't give courts enough time to spend the money or plan on the expenditure of the money before they really have a good sense, and having to return that money for other courts that may necessitate more, we may miss a few things by rushing into this. And maybe if there's a language about encumbrances, that might be helpful to make sure that courts are not going to end up short, even though they may not have booked an expense. Certainly expenses are going to potentially follow in the latter part of the fiscal year. And if there's a true up that's going to be examined in, let's say, spring, it may cause some issues with courts to try to execute the specifics of the program. So I am wondering if that language that is in the latter part of that recommendation to redistribute, if that's something that we can have a further discussion about, if not strike it, perhaps figure out if there's some other option that we can think about. So those are my thoughts.
And David, that thought is recognizing that this is just for the first year and just for the cohort courts.
Correct.
So your concern is even just for the first year for the cohort courts, the reconciliation might prove a time issue?
Yes. And since because we're going to get the money in January of 2023, and within a few months, we will have to determine how that money is going to be spent, and any money that's left over, there's a prospect of redistributing it to others. And I don't know that we're going to have enough time, or any court is going to have enough time, to really understand where that money is going to be spent. 2023 is only what, 7 months out, roughly. Yeah. And so I'm a little concerned that timeline may be too short for us to have a good sense of how much a court is going to be needing to move forward with the CARE Act program, such that it should be redistributed. We're not talking about a lot of money. I mean, it is meaningful, but it's in comparison with some of the other expenses that we get and the appropriations that we get. It's not a significant amount, such that there's a lot to go around, put it that way.
Okay. I see Neil and Chad both have their hands up, but before we get there, just real quick, Zlatko, Fran, or do you have, is there, or Don, is there within the first year, is there a requirement, or does it address what happens if the cohort court does not spend the money allocated?
I think there's nothing in the act that would speak to this. I think the I think we could certainly strike it, and it would be in line with many other allocation methodologies at the council. And okay. Fran, do you concur?
So, John, you're correct. There's nothing specific in budget language that talks about if the funding's not used. It has been a practice in past allocations where funding is distributed to courts, that if some courts spend a little bit more and other courts have some savings, that funding can be redistributed for the intended purpose. Sorry about that. It's going to be an annual allocation too. This isn't necessarily one-time money. This is just the first year for the first cohort of seven courts. So if funding isn't used this year, there's going to be, assuming, an additional appropriation next year growing because more courts will be participating.
So I believe Neil had his hand, and then Chad. Neil, did you have a comment?
Yeah, along those lines, the question I had is the issue I might show up. Is this a special allocation at this point, or is it really part of the trial court funding if it's an ongoing appropriation? And does it affect their 3% balance, a 3% cap balance? If it does, I would think that this should be treated as a project implementation, and wouldn't you put it in, classify as a WBS element in the accounting system, so that they're able to spend it to implement the program by that fall 2023 date, right? Because you have this artificial dividing line of the June 30th end of the fiscal year that you have to spend money under the 3% cap.
Chad, did you have a further comment?
Judge, I had literally the exact same question as Neil, which is whether these monies are subject to the 3% fund balance cap or not.
If you don't mind, I might, Mrs. Lotko, maybe address that. Unless there's specific provision that allows it to be excluded, it's not excluded. It would count if you haven't spent it. It'd be part of your fund balance. But I think Fran's point is important, that oftentimes when we've had one-time allocations that require several years, we've gotten exclusions from the fund balance cap. And in this instance, we're going to get presumably more money growing over the years, so there'll be new monies to fund the ongoing costs of the projects. But I think that the point that I like to add on with Neil is that it should be tracked. And the reason I bring this up is because I think in the report we talk about working, what's the out year costs. I know that some of the recent communications from CFCC about the program speaks to out year funding. Well, we need to make sure we're tracking and understanding so that we can tell the Department of Finance that this isn't enough. So I think that's an important part of this. These were our best estimates of need, not just this sort of administrative support, but also what will come in the 23-24 year as we start actually having hearings in the cohort one courts. So Neil, it doesn't get excluded. It should be tracked, I believe, separately. That would be my recommendation. That part doesn't have to be part of an allocation language. Here is something that we could work with our friends in branch accounting and procurement to set that up and then inform courts about that.
I'm just thinking that once the judicial council approves the allocation, the six courts normally have 6 months to spend it if it's for this fiscal year. Mm-hmm. It's tough to do that under any situation unless they've already started the recruitment strategies for the people they need to start up the program.
Yeah.
So with this, maybe I'm mixing apples and oranges, but could this then not also go to FPS for funds held on behalf of? And if there's money at the end of the year that they project they need to spend but haven't spent
Judge
it yet?
Conklin, typically those aren't the funds held on behalf of wouldn't be for sort of these types of operating expenses, staff costs. They're typically for one-time investments. But this isn't that type of process.
Yeah, this is more of an implementation project for an operations mm-hmm. program. And it's going to run across the fiscal year for them to start by the time that the county's supposed to start in October of next year.
But we'll get a new allocation in July of the expanded funds, Neil. So you'll have money to continue your implementation.
So this is considered a six-month allocation then?
We are allocating all the money for this year.
Okay.
So David had suggested some modifications, and again, I think Zlatko makes an excellent point. I think there has to be some type of reconciliation effort necessary to say to those entities outside of us, here's how we're spending the money or not, candidly. But I guess we could just stop there. Recommendation number two, approve the TICBAC to perform a reconciliation using CARE Act spending reports and court projections, and then not address how it's going to be redistributed, if there's a concern about that, until a later date. But that's just a suggestion.
I think David was suggesting that it just be stricken as you're just, they're going to be spending, but we could still, as Neil's suggestion is, have a WBS code that tracks the expenditure rather than a tick back reconciliation per se.
Yeah, and the whole idea is, we don't know what's going to be, you know, necessary to execute this program successfully. And having as much latitude with how we can spend that money, absolutely, we're going to need to track, every court who receives this money is going to have to track their expenditures and provide documentation of how it was used, because we're going to need that information, quite honestly, going into next year, and give courts kind of a sense of what is involved with putting together this program and making sure that it can be successful. Again, it's hard to do in a few months. We get the money in January, and then in a few months later, we have to potentially return some of that. One of the messages that we heard loud and clear from the Chief Justice is that this program has to succeed, and we need to do our very best to make sure that we do everything possible to make sure that it meets the scope of what is spelled out in the language, and having that additional latitude without, you know, having to return some of that money only a few months later makes it kind of difficult to, you know, make it as robust as we think it needs to be. So that's, respond to your question, Judge Conklin, about reconciliation and reporting, absolutely, but also with the exclusion of that last section of language is what I would encourage us to consider.
So is that a motion?
I would be happy to make a motion to approve all of the recommendations with a modification to the second recommendation, which would end the recommendation at court projections.
So we'd read, approve the TICBAC to perform reconciliation using CARE Act spending reports and court projections.
Yes.
And Zlatko and Don and Fran, do you think that gets us where we need to be?
I think so. And they just need to establish in Phoenix a tracking code.
Okay.
Neil suggested.
Yeah, my suggestion is, you know, if you're tracking these expenditures, if you can give these courts some latitude to spend to the end, to their that implementation date, because you're talking about two extra months or three extra months.
Neil, the budget doesn't allow for it to be carried over. We just don't have the ability as the council, because it's in specific, it's statutory, what are the carryover, the funds that are excluded from the 3% calculation. And like we, on the cannabis funds, we had to get specific budget authority to carry those funds over. I think because of this being an ongoing funding source, it wasn't viewed as this one-time pot of money that needed it to be spent over two fiscal years.
Okay.
All right. So, Neil, I think you've expressed a concern. I'm not a CEO, but I surely understand all those concerns, and we've talked about this before. Sometimes the good news is we're getting money. Sometimes the bad news is we're getting that money in a very limited period of time.
Yeah,
we have to be able to spend it, to oversimplify. But it sounds like we're going to continue to work on that between now and the end of the fiscal year.
No, I fully understand David's point, and that this is where I see it being a hindrance for the courts to implement their project because of the way it crosses over two fiscal years.
Yeah. Sounds like it's a good problem to have, but a problem we're going to have to solve. Yeah. So as I understand the motion now, it's to approve recommendations 1, 2, and 3 with the modification to recommendation number 2, stopping the sentence at the end of the word projections. Is there a second to that motion?
Judge Conklin, can I ask just a quick question on one before we finalize the motion?
Sure.
This is James from Marin. So I'm just going back maybe. So I had the same question with the 3%, but then Don, maybe this is a question for you with the 0.25 FTE base. Mm-hmm. Is that practically or realistically enough for some of the smaller courts to actually hire someone to get the project off the ground? I feel like with some of the hiring challenges right now, a $49,000 allocation, the 0.25 FTE may not practically produce anything for some of the smaller courts where they may spend up to that, or they may not even have enough to actually get somebody on board to help them kick this project off.
That may very well be the case. I would note that it's not that the funding estimate was based on two court FTEs, but the funding is not restricted to only spending on court FTEs. So it could be used in contracts, it could be used in temp positions, I'm not sure, to augment, like many small courts have part-time self-help staff to augment some of that. We did not have a really scientific way of getting to the 0.25 to be able to say this will solve the small court needs. We did draw on what we had done earlier with dependency, what we did with self-help, where the base is actually lower. It's at, I believe, 33,000 as a base. And so we kind of split the difference and recommended the 0.25.
Yeah, so I guess maybe the follow-up question is, like, for next fiscal year, if this is only 6 months worth of funding for a smaller court, if they end up hiring somebody relying on the 49K, does that sort of, is that baseline going to carry through to the fiscal year after, or is that subject to change? Go ahead, Don.
Oh, it would be subject to the to recommendation 3, where we ask the committee to pick this up and really kind of dig into all of the data that courts will be collecting, the courts in cohort 1, and produce an allocation formula for the rest of the project.
So I just want to make sure I understand, and maybe I'm just rephrasing it, but this is very limited. This is just for the very first year of the cohort courts implementation. And this is not projected to, well, if it works, it works. But on the other thing we're going to do is put a lot of work in the next 6 months to start to develop a more long-term allocation methodology.
That's right.
Does that answer your question, James?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It does.
Is there a second?
This is Judge Kelly. I would second David's motion.
Thank you, Judge Kelly. So it's been moved and seconded. The recommendation as modified be approved. Open now to discussion. Any further discussion of the recommendation? Now's the time, folks. If you have any, and I'll just parrot what David said. I was at the same meeting, and the present Chief Justice said to the Chief Justice coming in, this will be one of your most important tasks or most challenging tasks is CARE Act. She didn't refer specifically to the budget, but CARE Act implementation. So this is something I think we're going to be dealing with appropriately for a while, but it's a good start. So with that, if there's no other comments or concerns, then and my practice, by the way, folks, for those of you that haven't seen it, is in a committee such as this, especially in a Zoom presentation where it's very hard to look around at hands being raised, I approach it from the opposite. And my request for a vote is there any objection to the motion to approve the three recommendations as stated? So that's my question to the FMS members right now. Any objection to the recommendation as stated. All right, I've paused. I don't hear any recommendation. Did I miss anybody? Hearing no objections then, as the chair, I'm going to deem the recommendation unanimously approved. And this is going to tick back. So this will hit tick back next week for the tick back discussion right away. And all of you will be there for that meeting. So the recommendation as the motion is modified is unanimously approved. And I truly regret doing this, but I'm sitting on a grand jury and I just got a notification that they need to talk to me immediately. I'm going to step away for just a moment. And Chad, welcome to the hot seat. I think these next two items are relatively straightforward. I'm hoping I'll be able to address this and come back well before the end of the meeting, unless it ends quickly. And again, I apologize. Oksana, you're back with us?
Yes.
Excellent. Great. So I'll just introduce the next item, and that's Oksana's, and that's base funding floor inflationary increases. And Oksana's going to walk us through that. Chad, you're now in the hot seat. And folks, again, thank you so much for understanding. I regret this, but when the grand jury calls, I'm specifically assigned to them and I have to go down and address their concern. I'll try to be back before the end of the meeting. I'll mute myself and thank you very much all. I'll be back.
Thank you, Judge Conklin. And my apologies for the early technical difficulties I experienced. So good afternoon, everyone. My name is Oksana Tak. And I'm the senior analyst with the Budget Services. This report is to assist the subcommittee in discussing options and developing recommendation regarding updating annual base funding floor process to include automatic increases for the two base funding floor courts, Alpine and Sierra. When workload formula was first approved, a funding floor was established to reflect the cost of the minimum level of court operations, as there were operational funding needs above of what workload formula provided. Based on the staffing needs and operational cost at the time, a base funding floor amount of $750,000 was approved by the Council effective 2014-15. There have been two subsequent Council-approved increases to the funding floor, the $50,000 inflationary adjustment effective 2019-20, and most recently, $150,000 inflationary adjustment approved by the Council this past March, increasing base funding floor to $950,000, effective 2022-23. The base funding floor is an ongoing set funding amount as approved by the Council and currently is allocated outside of the workload formula. As a result, it would not always recognize past changes that courts within the workload formula are eligible to receive, including the inflationary cost increase funding. During the November 2021 FMS and TIGBAC meetings, when Alpine and Sierra request to increase the base funding floor amount was under consideration, members recognized that the current process for these two courts to request the funding floor augmentation is onerous and time-consuming, especially when considering that there is an automatic funding augmentation included in the workload formula for the rest of 56 trial courts. Proposed options are presented on page 10 of the materials and illustrate an automatic annual adjustment to the base funding floor amount in years when Consumer Price Index, the CPI, is provided in the budget. The percentage increase could be equal to the same CPI percentage provided to the other 56 courts, or as an alternative option, the adjustment to the base funding floor amount could be a portion of the percentage amount provided to the other 56 courts. Another option includes revisiting and evaluating the established base funding flow process for adjustment every 2 or 3 years and make necessary modification recommendations. That concludes our presentation.
Finding my unmute. Thank you very much. So so I see this is an action item. So we've got the sort of three options here. Does anybody have any questions for Oksana? And Oksana, am I correct that staff is not recommending any one of these over the other, right? These are just sort of options for us to consider.
Exactly, just the option for the discussion.
Okay. Well, does anyone, let me make sure I'm not seeing any hands up. Oh, James, is your hand still up from the last item? Or is it up for this item?
No, I have, I guess, a question about this item as well.
Okay.
And so I'm just wondering, and I may be completely missing something, but one option seems to provide more money than another option. And then option number three is sort of, we'll revisit and evaluate the established process. What does number three mean? Does that just mean that we'll apply options one and two at every year, or it's just, we'll revisit the topic every 2 years? So I have, I'm not sure I understand three, and then I don't think I understand the value of two.
Hey, James, this is Brandy. I can jump in on that. So because of the size of these smaller courts and because of the amount of funding that can sometimes be provided in the CPI, it could be that the percentage other courts are getting could be determined too high. And these courts could be inflated too quickly. So before, when we talked about these initially, the thought was maybe it is a portion of the percentage other courts receive that are provided to these two courts. Now, this would be in addition to the current process in place where these two courts have the opportunity to come forward every year and request an increase to their base funding floor. And that's where we come back to FMS and to TICBAC and the council to see if those can get increased. And this year it was just increased to 950,000. So any inflationary adjustments that the committee recommends and ultimately gets approved would be added to that base funding floor. But still, this process has been discussed as kind of onerous for these two courts. And it is an annual item on the work plan. So maybe we consider looking at it from time to time to see if we're serving these two courts well enough, or if any other adjustments are required beyond CPI, for example. So that's kind of where number three was going.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? I don't see any hands up. Oh, Neil.
Sorry, I'm not good at blue jeans. I apologize. I'm good at other things, but not blue jeans.
You have the floor, Judge Getty.
Sorry about that. I'm missing a little bit of the piece of the history because I was not on the committee in 2022. And is it that through that process you determined that by amending the base funding in the way that you did in 22, that they were as equitably funded as other courts at that point?
So I can answer part of that question, because I was here last year, and David probably knows just as well. But we, you know, these two courts, the funding floor had not changed in several years, and so they had some real legitimate cost increases they had to fund. But they came as a request to increase the funding floor to be able to accommodate the two courts. I think last year we had suggested, well, why are we doing this just on an ad hoc basis, you know, whenever they ask, rather than have it automatic as the other courts receive a cost increase as it started to become more systematic in the last 2 years. So that's where I think that's the genesis of it. One case we had one court asked for, it was like over $100,000 for to increase the base because they had some very specific needs that they had to address. Another one was slightly less. So the question is how do you take into, how do you accommodate these small courts that are way below that, that threshold? They need something to operate on a minimum basis.
And maybe I can add a little more seasoning to that. So for those new to the committee, way back when we were changing the funding methodology, it was based, of course, on filings, workload, and then it was based on that, you got a piece of the whole budget statewide. And when you use the funding methodology for some of these smaller courts, the amount of money that they would have received, because it's based on a similar calculation of what all courts receive, where there may be an economy of scale. You can have one manager to manage 20 or 30 or something like that, versus you have to have a manager at a small court that may only manage 5. And so you have a different economy of scale in that instance. And that, based on what we believed, you need to have a courtroom clerk, you need to have a CEO, you need to have clerical staff, you know, and so on. There was a base that represented how much it costs to staff a courtroom at a particular level. And that base, in terms of the number of personnel and individuals to support a court, we had come up with a standard number which exceeded the funding methodology amount. So that was the reason why the base actually became created. And it was not an exact science, but what it was trying to do was recognize that sometimes in some of these smaller courts, you have to support an operation with a CEO, let's say a courtroom clerk. You cannot just have no courtroom clerk, or the CEO is not, although maybe they do, is not, you know, someone who would then be tasked with becoming the courtroom clerk, etc. So that was the reason why this baseline approach was taken, so they would benefit. But I agree that, you know, as funds started to replenish the branch, at times the smaller courts, because they received this baseline, never got an adjustment upward. And so I think that there is some legitimacy, of course, into taking a look at how can we allow them to grow along with the other courts who are getting money in the form of CPI, just to make sure that they can, you know, increase salaries, let's say, or increase personnel or invest in technologies. And that's, you know, one of the reasons I think that taking an examination of the base funding floor be examined, and if not examined, to consider one of the two options that are contained in 1 and 2 for consideration. And I think one, to maybe answer a question that James had, is that every court that gets CPI, that same amount would be given to the these base funding floor courts. And if not that, then perhaps a portion of that CPI would then be given to these base funding floor courts. So if one is the full, let's say 3.8, and the second option is a portion of that amount that the judicial trial courts receive to be given to increase the base funding for some of these funding floor courts. I'm going to presume they're cluster one. Hopefully that's a little helpful.
It is, and it just kind of ties in with my question of if they're equitably funded, if we're all green, remember the little map, where we're all green now, we're all equitably funded, and given that your budget is 85% personnel anyways, you know, why wouldn't we give them CPI like everybody else? And then if later on it turns out that's not adequate to fund them, you know, because this was my point during the budget meeting, which is that's great that we're all green now and we're all supposedly equitable. But the folks that have been chronically underfunded still haven't necessarily caught up with their infrastructure over the years. So I'd be in favor of number one. And then later on, if it turns out that's not adequate to meet their needs, then they can come back and ask for more assistance. But supposedly we're all at that point. I think as we move forward, we're going to need to look at specialized programs to address and target those chronic underfunded courts to catch them up in terms of what they can do in their core functions. But that's something, a project for a different day.
Yeah, and one other thing to note, Judge Gatti, is that if a court does not receive any money in a subsequent year, it's a reduction, because typically what happens in every court is expenses go up. And so a no increased budget is a reduction, just, you know, functionally trying to cover your expenses. They go up every year because they just do. And so the approach that you're considering absolutely is on point with what they're facing from year to year if they're locked in at a particular amount.
So Judge Getty, can I consider that, or can we consider that? Sorry, the power's going to my head already. A motion. Judge Conklin leaves for 5 minutes, and it's anyway. Could we consider that a motion for option one?
Yes, please.
And do I hear a second?
Chad, this is Krista. I'll second.
Great. I will do the Judge Conklin approach, which is we have a motion for option one. Is there anyone here who opposes that? Any more questions or discussions? I've paused. I've waited. I think we therefore have option one is approved. So Oksana, does that give you what you need?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And so now let's see, on to item three, court interpreters program allocation methodology. This is another action item. And Brandy, I think you're presenting this one, is that right?
Yes, yes. Can everyone hear me okay?
Can.
Oh, great. All right, so here I am again, Brandy Oliveira from Budget Services. So today's allocation methodology recommendation is from the Ad Hoc Interpreter Subcommittee. So I'll begin with a brief background and then do a high-level overview of each of the recommendations. So in January of 2022, the Judicial Council approved recommendations from the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, or I'll say TICBAC going on for short. The recommendations were approved for an ongoing workload-based allocation methodology for interpreter funding, including cross assignments, benefit cost changes, and unspent funds that was effective July 1st of this year. So the methodology outlines the years in which expenditure data will be used for allocating funds to trial courts up to the appropriation amount. The methodology requires courts to return unspent funds for allocating to courts with a shortfall while still operating within the appropriation amount. It allocates staff interpreter benefit costs back to the courts dollar for dollar, and then it requires courts to offset interpreter expenses to courts providing cross assignments. The last part of this approved recommendation was for the Ad Hoc Interpreter Subcommittee to continue its work to review pandemic impact and data considerations for the allocation methodology starting in 2023-24. So the Funding Methodology Subcommittee has an annual work plan that is updated each year, and it's approved by TICBAC. This past summer, the item to develop an ongoing workload-based methodology for allocating interpreter funding for 2023-24 was approved for working on this fiscal year. So the ad hoc subcommittee met a few times, and through those deliberations, five recommendations were considered for this subcommittee to consider today. So number one is to exclude the 2020-21 pandemic year from the three-year average expenditure data that is used in the model indefinitely. So skip that year going forward. Number two, continue using historical expenditure data in the model while the ad hoc subcommittee continues collaborating with the Language Access Program on possible data enhancements and usage in the methodology to improve upon current interpreter needs. Number three, in the event that courts experience a shortfall, first utilize other courses' allocation savings to make up the difference up to the appropriation amount. If funding from savings is not enough to cover the shortfall, then we would go to the fund balance and utilize that via proportional methodology to those courts with a shortfall. Should there still not be enough interpreter funding in the fund balance to cover any shortfall, the court with the shortfall would cover that shortage using its own operating budget. And should the fund balance be reduced significantly over time to support interpreter program operations, a future budget change proposal may be required to keep up with increasing costs. So two more recommendations for you. Number four, for cross assignments, home courts are to submit reimbursement requests directly to receiving courts for the receiving court to cover the cost of the interpretation. And number five is to approve video remote interpreting, or VRI, as a future consideration in the allocation methodology as more information on VRI definitions are developed and VRI utilization is reviewed. So that concludes my presentation. I would like to invite any of the ad hoc subcommittee members to comment further on the recommendations, and then we can open up to questions as needed.
And I would like to officially welcome Judge Conklin back.
Well, I'm glad to be back, but in the brief time I was gone, you got all the way through item two and into item three, so maybe I should just stay away. But anyways, sorry to interrupt, but thank you for, I'm glad I'm back. Thanks for understanding. So Brandy thinks it doesn't sound like there's any follow-up questions or concerns. So Chad, do you wanna solicit a motion?
Sure. So do we have a motion on the recommendations as Brandy has presented them?
This is David Yamasaki. I would move approval.
Sorry.
So Judge Kelly, you want to second that?
I do.
It's been moved and seconded that the five recommendations that set forth at page 14 and 15 of your materials be approved. It's now open for discussion. Any further discussion?
Judge Conklin, if I could make a comment on that. I was on that group that was discussing some of the concerns and issues that we're facing, and this has been an issue for many years. In instances where we've had a fund balance, and in instances where we've not, the biggest issue that we have here is that it's difficult to track the number of interpreters that we need from year to year. And I think the language contained in recommendation number two, which involves expanding the data that is captured on court interpreter usage, will better identify what the resources are that a court needs to meet the demands that we have. It's not just by filings, quite honestly. Geography, it may have some impact on that, and that, of course, is not a consideration for the funding methodology. And the reality is we need to have much more or richer data to help us track what those expenditures are and also project what our needs are going into the future. Save the last few years as it relates to the pandemic, we had a pretty good idea of how much we've spent to meet the needs, but really we need to have a much more detailed information about how interpreters are used and the volume that we need day in and day out. And it's just really been a struggle. And I think the expansion of the database that is managed will help us get our arms around specifically what we need and maybe align it with some specific dollars. So with that, it's work that needs to be done, and that's the reason for my motion.
Very good, thank you. Any additional comments or concerns? All right, hearing none, as following our standard practice, is there any objection to the motion pending to approve all five recommendations? And Brandy, these are going to go to TIC back and then for further approval?
Correct, next Wednesday on the 10th. Thursday? I keep doing that.
No.
Thursday. No,
you're right, Thursday the 10th.
Thursday the 10th, not Wednesday.
All right. So, yeah. So I've called for a vote. Any objections? Any abstentions? Hearing none, we'll deem the motion to approve the five recommendations on item number three unanimously approved. We're going to check back next Thursday for everybody's further consideration. Brandy, any additional business that we need to conduct today?
Not today. Thank you.
All right. So Judge Merrifield and Judge Getty, welcome to the committee. Sometimes we go, you know, substantially shorter, but get ready. But sometimes we go substantially longer. So and we do try at times to do these over the lunch hour. But again, our main goal is to accommodate everybody's schedule to get a quorum. So that's what we did today. Chad, thanks so much for stepping up and completing work. We appreciate it. Anything else for the good of the committee? Then I'll leave you this one parting thought, as I always do. Go Dodgers next year. Thanks, everybody, so much. We'll look forward to seeing you at the Tick Back meeting next Thursday. Appreciate it, Judge. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.